Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Hey, Central Ohio. The Nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. Coda riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist Coda customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the Nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at coda.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, number 51. Exciting, and I'll be relevant in a moment. But joining me, Robin, today are Alex and Martin. How are you both?
Hello, Robin. Yes, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Glad to be here. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Energized. Feeling good. Feeling energized. Good. I feel at peace today. I feel an energy because I feel peaceful.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's a nice way to feel. That's
it is. It is. And yeah, I guess a few stresses from the past few weeks have been alleviated and I'm feeling a lot more relaxed. So yeah, good. Nice to see you both.
Oh, Martin's been killing again, but he feels better. Well, let's hope you transmit some of that peaceful positivity to our audience who are listening to us today as we discuss a very interesting topic that I had no idea it was a thing until Alex drew our attention to it today about, and I think this is right, Alex, isn't it? Non-fungible tokens.
Yes, that is okay. Right. Yeah, no, that's right. NFTs.
NFTs and the art world. And is it all a scam? We'll be discussing this and hopefully it'll all make more sense when we discuss it. but we'll also be talking about our favorite comments of the week submitted by you, our lovely listeners, and things that we learned this week, as well as concluding today with a quiz, what I wrote. But before we do all that, just want to say a big thank you to all our Patreon supporters and our YouTube members, who this week will have had access to, as always, two exclusive, a little more interestings. And we'll have been talking about Russia and China and NASA and the space race for the moon.
And ooh, big topic.
Martin had a wonderful topic about 3D printed houses.
Would you buy a 3D printed house? Will they all look the same? What's the future of 3D printing?
Will they fall apart when they get soaked by rain? Who knows?
That too. Yeah. All these questions may or may not be answered.
Probably not. But, you know, check it out. And anyone who joins our Patreon or our YouTube membership for the minimal amount will have access to those things. And before we get into the meat of this podcast, I should also mention that I said this was number 51 because, of course, number 52, our next podcast, will mean we've been doing this thing for an entire year,
which is astonishing, to be honest. Well, it's over a year, isn't it?
It's already been a year, yeah.
But that's because we're lax on when we release the podcast.
Yeah, we don't have like a strict date for releasing.
We've done a year's worth of podcasts in about 14 months.
that's pretty good, though.
It's not bad going.
And we thought to mark the occasion, we would do an exclusive live podcast, which we'll be hosting over on Twitch. We've started the Twitch recently, and you're all welcome to join us as we live podcast on Twitch. But don't worry, for those of you who won't be able to join us for that, we will be uploading it to YouTube shortly afterwards. But join us live, if you can, on Twitch. We'll put a link in the description for this, and we'll be announcing the date and time in our YouTube community tab, and probably on Twitter at JInterestingYT very soon after this episode has gone.
You know what, Robin?
Yeah.
If people head over to twitch.tv /just_interesting, they can follow us right now and then they won't miss out because they'll get a notification for when we go live.
Exactly.
And this I don't work in marketing because Martin's so much better at this kind of thing.
But, you know. Because then people won't miss out.
That was a great idea. Yeah. Do that. Do what Martin just said. Go over to twitch.tv/just_interesting and follow us right now.
And I believe right now we've got just under, by the time of recording, we've got just under 100 followers.
We do,
And Alex said that if we get over 200 followers by the time of the live stream, he's going to stream Bloodborne for 24 hours solid. So
I did not say that, but I would not complain with doing that at all. It's one of my favorite games. And if you want to see me play it, I've already played a couple of hours over there. It's really fun. It's a good time. Good times I had on our streams. And we've been streaming some Fast and Furious Crossroads. For anyone interested in the best film franchise of all time. It's it's a little bit different than what we do over on this channel, but if you ever want to be immortalized in one of our podcasts, next week is the week for you, because we'll be talking to you live on the stream and then it'll be uploaded onto our YouTube. So really, it's the perfect chance for you to be immortalized in one of our podcasts.
Indeed.
There we go.
That is an important thing to mention. We will be interacting and responding to your comments live during the podcast. So yeah, get on that train. Moving into the main podcast now, Martin, what did you learn this week?
Well, it's not necessarily something I've learned, but it was quite an interesting story about a man. So I thought I'd share it with you guys because it made me laugh. It made me laugh.
Okay.
So, Alex, as people know, you've moved house, haven't you? You've moved to Scotland. You've moved country. And I don't know whether you mind me disclosing this, but you've moved to a little known city called Edinburgh, haven't you?
Yeah. Do you want my address as well?
Yes, please. Well, another person moved to Edinburgh, or turned up in Edinburgh, just over 2 years ago. This was in August 2018, I believe.
Okay.
Or it might have been September. August or September. Anyway, that kind of time. And so this man was an Italian man from Pisa, and his name was Salvatore Manino. Okay. And so he turned up some 1,200 miles away from his home in Pisa, in the capital of Scotland, Edinburgh. And he was unable to tell doctors how he had arrived in the city, or, you know, how he had got there. He had no idea why he was there. Had a bit of amnesia, you know, didn't realise what was going on.
Mm.
Right. Didn't have any identification with him or any memory at all of what had happened. And so he was taken to hospital. And so the Italian and Scottish police, the Italian police came over as well and were like, this bloke's clearly Italian. Scottish police questioned him. and so they basically interviewed him and then looked on his phone and his devices to try and find out what had happened and why he had suddenly turned up in Edinburgh, 1,200 miles away, without any knowledge of what had happened. The lawyer of the family confirmed the who this person was in the aftermath of this event. And he said that this man's wife and son, after finding out who he was, were reunited with him, but he claimed that he did not know them said that they were like strangers to him. So, pretty sad thing, you know, having a complete memory loss of what had happened.
Yeah.
And
that's when the story ends.
that's the end of it.
That's all you've heard.
And so the investigators, when they're investigating this, found a bag left at his home with almost £10,000 worth of cash in it. And a written note, cryptic note, written in numerical code that said, "Forgive me, I'm sorry."
Wow, what?
And so they're wondering, well, you know, what the hell is going on here? And the funny part of the story is that this man had left his home in Italy after having an argument with his mother-in-law.
Right.
And so he faked having memory loss.
Oh, no.
And travelled 1,200 miles to Edinburgh to get away from his mother-in-law.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Why did he have to fake memory loss? Why did he have to do?
That's the thing. I'm not quite sure. I think he wanted to be anonymous, because if they found out who he was, his identity, where he'd come from, etc., they would have put the pieces of the story together, reunited him with his mother-in-law and family. And so he wanted a bit of a breakaway. So when the police interviewed him, he pretended not to know. So they they would leave him alone.
Created this amazing random mystery.
Yeah.
If you want to fly under the radar, knowing his wife don't and child. Take out like £10,000 in cash and write a cryptic note.
Yeah, I mean, the police back in Italy then searched his like devices, his computer at home, and found searches for how to disappear and how to fake memory loss. So it kind of pieced that, it kind of pieced it together. And so after, you know, they found out what had happened, this bloke said, "I did it to get away from my nagging mother-in-law. I never lost my memory. I wanted to show my family I was important to them." He says, he went on to say, "I wanted to regain my position as a husband and a father and felt that my mother-in-law had taken that away from me."
Wow.
And this is all on the Visit Scotland tourist information site, I'm guessing. This man hated his mother-in-law so much. The first place he wanted to go was Scotland. Visit Scotland.
I mean, it doesn't really say why he chose Scotland, apart from, I guess, it's quite far away. Do you reckon he kind of went to the airport and was just like, looked at the board and was like, where would I actually like to go?
No, I reckon he fancied it because Edinburgh is a lovely city and everyone should come and visit here.
There we go.
I think that's,
drinks on Alex. Yeah.
That's why.
There we go.
No, so didn't agree with that. Agree to that.
So if you ever want to get away from your mother-in-law or anyone else that's nagging, hit Alex up. Go to Edinburgh.
Why do you think I left London?
Help you with the memory loss.
Whoa. Okay.
I wasn't trying to get away from you.
That was a good story, Martin. That was a really good story. Unusual, to say the least. What did you learn this week, Alan?
So I learned something, not remotely similar, actually, very different. Have either of you heard of mercy dogs?
Are they dogs that come back and kill you if you're dying?
It sounds like a really bad fast food chain. Have you ever been to mercy dogs? What do they do? Well, it's just like hot dogs, but, you know...
I thought you were going to say it sounds like a really bad Fast and Furious subtitle. Fast and Furious 10, Mercy Dogs.
Like Mercenaries or something.
Watch Dogs 4, Mercy Dogs.
Yeah.
No,
I haven't. The answer's no.
The answer's no to all of these suggestions. Okay. Although, yeah, when I thought they would be like mercy killing dogs, like you said, Robin. But no, it's not. Basically, mercy dogs were otherwise known as ambulance dogs or Red Cross dogs. Yeah. Were dogs that served in a paramedical role in the military, most notably World War One. So they were sent out after large battles, and they've got like, you know, clothes on with a Red Cross on them, and they would
clothes on. These dogs were wearing full clothes.
Well, no, just like a, you know, like a dog coat. Cool. But they were equipped with medical supplies. And they were trained to seek out wounded soldiers, to offer them medical supplies, or if they were mortally wounded, to comfort dying soldiers. And they were trained. They were trained to guide combat medics to soldiers who required extensive care.
I mean, that sounds a little bit more useful, doesn't it? Sounds otherwise, the dog gets there. It's like, do you want any bandages? No, arms have been blown off. I can't help you.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't like cauterize a wound or anything like that. But no, how amazing is that? And as many as 20,000 dogs are estimated to have served as mercy dogs in World War One and Two, and they're credited with saving thousands of lives. So,
that's good.
There you go, man's that's best great. Friend. Dogs are just so amazing, aren't they? What amazing! Yeah. Like, I love dogs, man.
I wonder
if any
of those dogs went on to have a career in medicine. They always gave the same diagnosis. How's the patient? A little rough.
Very good, Robin. I'm leaving the podcast right now.
Wait. That's great. I love that idea. And I would hope that the Red Cross was honoured by the enemy and that they didn't try to shoot the dogs whilst they were.
That'd be so dark, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I would really hope so, yeah. I mean, they said after the battles, so presumably, like, this is when... I'm sure there was still shooting going on, but hopefully...
Yes, that nebulous moment where you're like, was the battle over? Like, yeah. Yeah. Send out the dogs.
There are combat dogs either way. You know,
there were lots of animals, weren't there, in World War One? Wasn't there recently for the anniversary? There was a special commemorative service at some point, I believe, in the UK at least,
for all the animals. For the animals, because
horses and birds, like the carrier pigeons, and the dogs, and presumably cats. I don't know if cats were useful.
Cats,
maybe.
Speaking of Edinburgh, actually, up at Edinburgh Castle, there's a monument to all the horses that served in World War II, I think, or World War One.
That sounds really nice. Got to remember all our friends.
Exactly.
Well, I learned this week something much...
It's going to be really crude, like, isn't it?
Like, no, no, it's not crude. I just feel like I'm dragging the tone down a bit.
I love, Robin, you're trying to transition there into something completely different. You're like, I'll just speak slightly softly. It's like the news reporters then go on to like the joke bit of news after talking about like a massacre. They're like, terrible. Anyway.
Yeah. That's basically it. Well, I mean, any regular listeners should be familiar, as we are, with the Paul Masson wine adverts featuring Orson Welles. And when writing this week's quiz, I was thinking, oh, I'll put Orson Welles' Paul Masson question in. But what I learned was so good, I had to put it in this fact. So I learned that the first advert Orson Welles did in 1978 for Paul Masson was such a success that sales rose by 30%.
Wow. That is very successful.
And such a success, they decided to give him a permanent contract to advertise Paul Masson for $500,000 a year, plus residuals for TV and print ads.
Back in the 70s?
Wow. Yeah, so this is about 2 million, 78 to 81. Yeah, so 3 or 4 years. And that was about 2 million a year. And included in his contract, and this will come as no surprise, was that he had to be provided a large multi-course lunch with alcohol every single day of every single shoot.
Wow. That's such a bad idea. Why do they agree to that?
Why do they agree to that?
Mental. It'd be the opposite. It'd be like,
we're paying you £2 million a year.
Surely you'd be like, part of the contract is that you do not drink on set because you're known for being like a troublemaker.
Oh, well, the plot thickens. Did you know that in 1981 they fired Orson Welles from being their mascot, so to speak, and replaced him with John Gielgud? Do you know why they fired him?
Oh, let me guess.
Because he was too drunk on set one day?
The opposite. It's because he'd stopped drinking wine and publicly stated it in interviews. And they said, well, we can't have you represent us anymore, despite all the times you've turned up drunk to a shoot.
Wow.
So, yeah, they fired him in 1981. And then, final twist, they offered him the job again 4 years later in 1985. But he turned it down.
Did he fall off the wagon? Is that...
he must have.
Yeah, that's what happened. No, I think he stayed, at least didn't drink wine, at least, until his death, which was 6 days after they offered him the job again.
Oh, wow.
In 85.
Oh, wow, yeah. I've drunken so much Paul Masson. It's fermented in the bottle and I can't drink it anymore.
Does he do anything?
Does he do anything? And he was pretty, he made some pretty scathing comments about the quality of the wine after they fired him. And whilst he was filming, to be honest. I'm surprised they offered him the job again. But that's what I learned this week.
Oh, that's very an amazing
good.
Story.
Very good.
I'm ashamed that I didn't know that already, given how many times I've used it as my quiz puzzle.
There's a Wikipedia page dedicated to the Orson Welles and Paul Masson adverts. It just gets that we don't get to learn about scientific achievements in India and Pakistan and Asia in general, but we get to learn about Orson Welles and the Paul Masson career.
I wonder how popular our podcast needs to become for us to get a little mention on that Wikipedia entry.
Oh, yeah.
Like a little, you know, the
in pop culture section.
Yeah, in pop culture. Can we create that? Is that something we can sort out? No.
We do that. Very self-serving, perhaps. But yeah.
Perhaps. It's not. You don't want that, do you? Yeah. You want it to be filled out. You don't want to just stumble across it someday.
At the very least, actually, if you're thinking about this, if anyone wants to go onto the YouTube Paul Masson video and say, oh my goodness, this is from the Just Interesting podcast, then, you know, please do. Please do. There was actually one comment on my DVR Let's Be Avenue video.
Oh, really?
There was actually. Yes. Yeah.
Someone was like, this is featured in the Just Interesting podcast. I was like, that's nice.
Yeah, thank you to whoever made that comment.
Yeah.
Some guerrilla marketing there.
Shameless
marketing for the podcast. If you want to promote a podcast on all of your platforms.
Please do, yeah. But speaking of YouTube comments of the week. So this week we had loads of really interesting comments. In fact, last week's podcast, which was about Italy blocking the shipment of vaccines, COVID vaccines, obviously, to Australia, got quite a debate going. And there are loads of really interesting opinions. But I think generally people seem to agree that Italy was in the wrong. And when it wasn't talking about vaccines, people seemed to be... I seem to have done something offensive to somebody at some point. Not sure what was going on there, but, you know, We'll deal with that later. but in particular, Aquamarine commented and said something that I think kind of sums up how I really feel about this kind of situation, which is Aquamarine says, I believe the moral thing to do with the COVID-19 vaccine would be to share the knowledge of how to create the vaccine with all countries of the world. This would allow and encourage each country to produce their own vaccines. The companies who invented the vaccine would still get recognition and compensation enough for the cost of development. However, the health of all peoples and all countries should be held well above huge profits for these pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, in an ideal world, you know, every country would also then have the capabilities to produce the vaccine. I think in reality, that's
probably unlikely.
That might not be the case for some countries, at least. But yeah, I mean, in terms of improving scientific research in countries that don't currently have the ability to produce their own vaccines as well. So, like, you know, taking it back a step. That is the hope, isn't it? That everyone's up to a level where they can produce the vaccine for themselves going forward. I mean, another thing to tag onto that would be certain countries would have a massive population, but maybe not the capacity. So then, you know, at what stage do you actually use international aid to help them? But yeah, I know. I agree with the sentiments. Definitely there, isn't it? Agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really interesting topic last week because, as Skinny Matt in the comments says, I was thrilled to hear you guys disagreeing and debating the topic. I hate when you guys all agree on every topic, making it a dull conversation, but enjoyed the diverse views on the subject. And we did last week. And it was interesting. It was all the more interesting because of it. I think me and Robin kind of came to similar but different conclusions. And then Martin, you had a different opinion. It was a really tough one to debate because I was kind of on the fence either way.
I think we tried to cover all the different angles, but there were some angles that people in the comments were able to provide that we hadn't thought of.
It was an interesting one.
True. I mean, the comment that stood out to me was from Angelos87. When Andros says, I tried to leave a comment on every video, but I don't know, as an Australian, where my position is on this subject.
Yeah,
I agree with Robin mostly, but as this video comes out, we're at risk of another breakout in Brisbane and Sydney. And this was kind of, at the end, this was probably my final point that I made, with thinking that Australia should have these vaccines regardless of their situation with dealing with COVID. Is because if they're prevented from having these particular vaccines, they don't have much time to react in terms of sourcing others. The situation can change very quickly, and I think that news of these breakouts shows that is the case. And then he or she ends, Angelos, I don't know either way. PS, congratulations on the 50th YouTube episode. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I just wanted to do a quick shout out to Margot, who, as an Australian viewer, was able to give us a lot of detailed thoughts and perspective on the situation from Australia. But a few too many comments for us to respond to them all in one go, Margot. So sorry about that.
I did actually want to also reference another comment Margot left, where she said, so with Alex moving, does that mean we'll never see all three of you together in the same bunker again?
Alex is like, I hope not.
Why do you think I've moved to Edinburgh? No, definitely not. I mean, what I will say, the bunker's gone. Either way, the bunker's no longer here.
Yeah.
However, you know, I would definitely, you know, as soon as lockdown's over, I'm going to come back down to London for sure. You know, we'll, I've got family down there. We'll, I'll be visiting. I'll probably be down there visiting more often than when I was back living down there anyway. So I think all three of us together doing these podcasts is definitely going to happen again at some point.
Yeah, and as soon as we're able to get out and about as well, that we have lots of different things that we want to do together, don't we, in terms of creating some content around different places that aren't just in a room podcasting as well. We've spoken about that a fair amount. It's just about, you know, timings and stuff like that and when we're actually able to do that. So,
and now we actually, now we have a base of operations if we ever wanted to do anything in Scotland as well. So
yeah, worldwide.
Exactly. Well,
speak for yourselves. I'm staying here.
I'll do something outside as long as it is in the square mile radius around my current sitting location.
And that brings us nicely onto the topic of today's podcast. I don't know how it does, but it does. It's time to segue. We've got to move on. Which is, now, we're going to have to explain this because I'm going to assume, in hope, that most of you listening are just as ignorant of this as I was when Alex brought this up earlier today as a potential subject for today's podcast. And it's to do with art, but a new way of creating and selling art that's got a lot more in common with Bitcoin than you might expect. And the question of whether, is it all a bit of a scam, and is it a bubble that's about to burst, or is it actually the future of art? So, big question, big topic, but first we should explain the basic principles underlying it, which are to do with NFTs, or in the full form, non-fungible, I think, or fungible, could be, tokens. And what that means is something that cannot be exchanged for something else of equal value, as in every item is unique. And non-fungible means non-replicable. It's unique. It's, you can't make a copy of it. And that's basically what most cryptocurrencies are. Each coin is a unique thing in a blockchain of software, except with a cryptocurrency, of course, one Bitcoin, for example, is equal to another Bitcoin. So they are technically fungible because you can exchange a Bitcoin for a Bitcoin and they're of equal value. And it wouldn't really make a difference if people exchange one for another. They have no personal attachment to the Bitcoin that they're giving away or the Bitcoin that they're receiving. Except with these things, we're talking about art. And so you've got pieces of art that are completely unique and created using a blockchain so that you can trace the ownership of this item and exchange it for a price, usually, with people. And whoever receives this piece of art is now the new owner of that unique item, and nobody else has a copy. I think that's the basic. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
From my understanding, that does sound right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds about right.
Yeah, so digital art created in the computer and then sold online using this blockchain format to make it a unique thing.
Which doesn't, when you think about it, make any sense. Because digital art, anyone can see it online. This artwork that's being sold online. And just to say, actually, you say it's artwork, but it can really be anything digital. It can be drawings, music, GIFs, animated GIFs. Jack Dorsey, the head of Twitter, has been selling his some of his tweets as NFTs.
Some of his earliest ones, right?
I think his first tweet was selling for hundreds of thousands or millions.
This is why I want to talk about it, because we've got examples. These things are not just selling for pennies. They're selling. People are making millions selling these things. There's an example of an artist who made $69 million, was it? Selling a piece of art last year in 2020. In the middle of a pandemic, an economic downturn, they sold a piece of art created digitally, which I would assume means it's easy to copy, right? Because the artist will have a copy on their computer, right? And they just upload a copy to the sales portal online and then send the copy. And it's just, and people are paying $69 million for it. And to me, firstly, like I say, there's some things like Jack Dorsey's tweets. Why are you buying those things? And secondly, things like this piece of art, I don't know about you two, but I want to hang art on my wall. Why would I buy a digital piece of art for $69 million? Yeah. Because
you're... I understand what you're saying. I think in terms of that one, just to be clear, it was the entire collection of his artwork where he had 5,000 pieces. So it wasn't just for one piece of art, but still. If you break that down, that's still a lot of money per piece of art, for, as you say, like a digital footprint of some art. Yeah. And my cat's brought a mouse in.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Hard cut here.
So what I don't understand about this, and I think, Alex, you mentioned this already, is it just all seems fake. It seems like a completely, again, a bit like Bitcoin, isn't it? An artificial currency, and that sounds kind of a stupid thing to say, but someone said, I want to make an alternative currency with the idea of, democratizing currency and getting it removed from the gold standard and away from government control. But this seems even more fake because, you know, the art world and collectibles are a thing that people already do. There are markets for them, but you get real tangible objects out of it. But you're just getting digital versions of a thing here, you know, and you're paying
people digital versions of something that everyone kind of has access to anyway. Like, a lot of these are just kind of gifts that are being sold. Like Nyan Cat is one of these that have been sold into a turned into an NFT. Wow. And then sold for millions. I think a lot of the interpretation is that these things are only real if people believe in them. Like Tinkerbell, Robin. everyone has to believe in it for it to work. It's like the blue tick on Instagram, you know, it's not real.
Right.
It's not real. It doesn't make any difference, but it has kind of intrinsic value because people believe that it makes, you know, it has some kind of value in that people feel like it has a value.
Isn't that intrinsic to the art world in general? I mean, there's the cost of the paint, and if you like a picture, you like a picture, but there's no reason why a Warhol picture should be worth millions and something else that someone else does isn't worth anything. It's the value you place on that. And what the art world places on it. You're part of that clique, aren't you? You're part of that small, exclusive club who owns something that other people can't or don't have the ability to own. It doesn't really matter if it's digital or not. But I know what you mean. Like, hanging something on your wall is very different to having a file of it, right?
So is that the main reason people get into this kind of underworld market of NFTs? Is it purely a prestige thing?
I think it's partly a prestige thing. I think people buy as a buyer buying NFTs. I guess the reason why you might buy into this is if you want to support like an artist that you really like, which I guess is why rich people would spend hundreds of thousands or millions on a painting to begin with, because they really like that artwork. You also, in some instances, get some usage rights with. If you purchase that artwork, like you can use it as a profile picture or something. I don't know if there's any, it kind of becomes your commercial property. So you can use it commercially online, I guess.
Right.
In some instances. So maybe that is where the intrinsic value lies. And then there's the other thing, which is people could be using this thinking that the value of them will go up in the future.
Right.
As investments. Like Jack Dorsey's tweets. Who's buying that because they want to support billionaire Jack Dorsey? I don't know if he's a billionaire. He could be just a multimillionaire.
I think he's not quite reached the billionaire club yet, but he must be close.
Still.
Yeah. The triple comma club.
What happened to the proceeds of his tweets?
I'm not sure.
You carry on. I have a quick look at that because I'm interested now.
Yeah. As a buyer, but I mean, there is I think the original idea behind NFTs was to kind of democratize that whole, art exhibition scene, like the in real life art exhibition scene, which is kind of seen as quite elitist. Like, just to get your art into a gallery, you have to have some extreme connections. You have to know people. It's not necessarily about how good the art is all the time. It's about whether you attended the right meeting, attended the right cocktail party,
have the right
happened to know the curator of the Tate Modern,
went to the right school.
So I think this was seen as a way that artists could put their art up for sale online and in a way that attracts people, same kind of prestige buyers who would spend these kind of exorbitant sums on Monets or Picassos or
whatever. Suppose it cuts out the middleman. You don't have the same kind of auction houses or agents or curators, you know, in between who are dealing the art. You've just got the online platform, which presumably takes a small commission, and the artist gets pretty much everything that the buyer is willing to pay. And yeah, that's, yes. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think some people have said they like the fact that the buyers and the artists talk directly to each other when they're making these sales, and they say, oh, I really like this piece of artwork. And the artist is like saying, yeah, absolutely. You're a great guy. I'll give you my painting. Well, I'll sell you my painting. So I get that, except isn't there an issue?
What do you do with it?
Yeah. Well, what do you do with it? Yeah. But there's another issue as well here, because it sounds like it's grown already to the point where it's an industry, and you've got these online marketplaces which control the number of artists who can sell on their platform, and they pick and choose the artists who they deem worthy, essentially, to sell. Mm-hmm. And isn't that just the art world, but in digital form?
Yeah, the idea that it's democratizing the sale of art, I think, is a little bit misguided, isn't it?
Yeah,
because it is still this exclusive club, and the fact that there is this artificial scarcity that they're drumming up by only having a certain amount of auctions per day or whatever, or a certain amount of artworks on sale. Like I think that there's only one copy of the artwork for sale. They're certainly not selling prints, digital prints, if you want to call it that. Of course, there's still this. There's still this Emperor's New Clothes deal going on, isn't there? I saw you coming, kind of thing.
It's fitting. Like, it seems like the people that do best with NFTs seem to have a huge social presence. So it's fitting that Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, is also in the NFT game.
Yeah, back to his tweet. It sold, his first tweet, was highest bid at the time of this article, which was a couple of days ago, was $2.5 million. And he's donating those proceeds to Give Directly, a non-profit that lets donors send money directly to people living in poverty. So that's quite good.
That is good.
Something at least.
Yeah. But then, I mean, in terms of like the people's attitudes towards NFTs, it seems like some people, they've exploded in popularity recently. This has been around for a few years, but it's only like been very recently like this has seemed to have attracted the attention of the mass media.
Right.
But yeah, some people are treating them like it's going to be the future of fine art collecting, for the mega rich at least. And then other people are treating them like Pokemon cards and collecting them that way and trading them like Pokemon cards. Which, speaking of, Logan Paul sold some NFTs relating to his Pokemon cards that he spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars on. So he's literally selling Pokemon cards as NFTs.
That doesn't make sense.
It's like a Logan Paul themed Pokemon card that he's designed. Not him, obviously, but
And football clubs are doing something similar, aren't they? So actual football clubs,
exactly. So, yeah,
soccer for our American listeners. Creating digital virtual trading cards for people to get into the trading card game. To be fair, that kind of makes a bit more sense to me, because it's just digitizing something that already exists. And I don't know, for some reason my mind is struggling to get around how that is useful for the art world, but it makes sense for trading cards. My brain can process that for some reason. I'm not quite sure.
Like I say, trading cards are very standardized, aren't they? Is there that artistic value to them? And that's the thing. When you see a painting, you see the textures of it. You don't want to touch it. You don't want to feel it, but you can actually physically see it there. Mm. Whereas you know what the trading card is going to be like. It's going to be their face, isn't it? Mm. Face on the picture, probably a few stats, and that's it.
I suppose if I had a big enough TV, I could buy. I mean, some digital art is absolutely great, and lots of digital art these days is amazing. Like, just look at the art books for any movie or TV show. If you had a big enough TV, like a 100-inch TV, put it on your wall and it just displays the digital art that you bought, I guess that could be a thing. But then the energy consumption of that is so wasteful.
But you could do that. But the thing is, that digital art, you'll be able to see it anyway. You could put it on your TV anyway without having to buy it.
just thinking, I own this.
That's
kind of it, isn't it?
It is the whole thing of being a collector of anything. It doesn't matter, people collect things that are worthless just because they're interested in the collection, and it's not necessarily about anything other than saying that you've been able to collect it.
Let me ask you both this: have you ever grinded for hours in a game?
What?
Oh, right.
Get out. Filth. Utter filth. Have you ever grinded for hours in a game? Why did I repeat it? For like an armor set or something? Some useless like, okay. Or like a special right. item that does nothing.
It looks good digitally.
Like it looks good digitally, but ultimately does nothing.
I get where you're coming from. I understand it. There's the sense of achievement. But is there? But then you feel like you've achieved that if you're just spending money on buying something digital.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels a little bit different. But anyway, each to their own. There's got to be some people here that are buying this thinking that it's going to be an investment that goes up. And fair play if it ends up being the case, then.
I mean, yeah, it could.
That is what it is.
I feel like it's at the best case scenario though. It's like Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency, boom and bust, and. Every once in a while it might boom and you're lucky if you're there. The rest of the time it's just going to be so unstable that it's a risk to get into the market when it's on the up and up, you know?
Yeah, very true.
So that's my personal opinion, which is why I'll never be rich.
I imagine with this kind of thing, with the whole trading situation, you can get, you know, that old story of someone who traded a thumbtack up for like a 4-bedroom house in 10 trades on eBay. They traded like a thumbtack for a pen for a snow globe or something and then ended up getting a house out of it. I can imagine something similar with some like an NFT digital art. They trade it their way up to like a Jackson Pollock or something crazy. But anyway, I mean, there's one big major spanner in the works with this whole NFT situation and the big controversy surrounding it, which is the carbon footprint that this causes, which many people are saying is just unsustainable for the long term, because like people are seeing this as the future of, you know, art trading online. And because this uses the Ethereum, which is a cryptocurrency blockchain, basically the carbon footprint of this is huge. It's massive.
So the energy consumption to mine this cryptocurrency to be able to produce this is that's what's causing issues, right?
So one example is Space Cat, which is an NFT that's a GIF of a cat in a rocket heading to the moon. It's just a GIF, basically. And the carbon footprint of this is equivalent, apparently, to an EU resident's electricity usage for 2 months.
Whoa. What?
2 months?
The creation of it, and then the kind of storage of it, and then the transferring of it, and the possession of it. Is that what that includes?
I'm not sure if it's that, or if it's the actual mining of the cryptocurrency that's then used to purchase it.
Oh, I see. The blockchain is the issue. Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood that. Yeah.
Yeah, but what if that like continues in the future? If this is to continue in the future, then that will become way more prolific, and that, you know, carbon footprint will only increase.
So you make the GIF, and then you mine the NFT blockchain to associate with the GIF to make it a unique thing, and that mining process is what absorbs all this energy and burns all this carbon. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you do. I can't confirm that. Yeah. I'm not sure about the actual process of making an NFT, how you would go about that. But in terms of like the carbon footprint that they've been attributed with, it's huge. I mean, that one was slightly larger than the average that's been taken over 18,000 NFTs. According to the average, the carbon footprint's somewhat lower than that. It's about 1 month of electricity usage. And obviously they're driven mainly by the you know, the heavy hitters, the really popular ones. I think it's also like the trading between them is like trading cryptocurrency, which is also like a huge amount, requires a huge amount of computational power.
Yeah.
The amount of energy that would be required, especially if this was to exponentially increase in popularity.
If everyone suddenly got in on the game.
Yeah. Especially overnight. Especially as like more and more companies are becoming more and governments around the world are reacting to, maybe not at the speed that we'd like, but are reacting to the issue of climate change. This just seems like a huge backward step. And a lot of artists are protesting NFTs because of that. I think there was a website, quite a popular like art selling website, that initially planned to get into NFTs, but then a backlash of users kind of forced them to retreat. Yeah, ArtStation, which is an online marketplace for digital artists, cancelled their plans to launch a platform for NFTs within hours after artists called NFTs an ecological nightmare pyramid scheme.
Okay.
It's pretty damning, isn't it?
Although I'd like to see a direct comparison, because it must be, fortunately, it's very easy to measure the carbon footprint of NFTs because it's so connected to blockchain. So it's this obvious starting point and end point. But what's the economic, not to berate classical art, but, you know, what's the economic, sorry, the ecological impact of, you know, traditional canvas art with paints and brushes, sometimes made of animal hair, you know, all the materials that go into, and your studio space as well, you know, physical materials, just powering a room, you know, to paint the art. I mean, it's more efficient because putting on the lights in a house is more efficient use of energy than mining blockchain. But I would like to see a comparison there, to see just how much worse it is. But yeah, if it's 1 month's energy for an average NFT, I'm willing to bet that one piece of art from an artist is not as bad as that.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I guess you've got to, they've got to, the artist has still got to create the artwork in the first place, which could take a month of being sat in your house with the lights on, the computer on anyway.
Exactly, that's true. Yeah, which might override all the carbon footprint of the paints being created and shipped to the shop and whatever. Yeah. Good point. The other thing that gets me about this, the big irony here is, and I assume there's a way around this, but digital stuff in general, the big fear, you know, we live in the information age, and anyone who's got a mind for history will think, well, in 1,000 years time, will anything be left if there's a server breakdown, if the internet disappears? And particularly, even if it's not just the internet, hard drives have an average lifespan of 3 to 5 years. CDs, usually 3 years before they become unreadable. Then even if the media itself, like a USB pen, lasts for 10 years, I'm not saying USB pens do, but if it did, when USB ports go out of fashion and you don't have a computer that has a USB port, then the USB pen's useless. So just storage of digital things, whether it's the hardware that breaks because it rots over time, or whether it's the format becomes extinct, you know, like opening a Word document from 1998 might be impossible in 5 years' time. I just get paranoid that people are spending, well, the artists are spending all their time creating this art that might get lost in the ether, and the people buying it are spending millions of dollars on something that might not exist tomorrow, you know. Maybe that's too much of disaster thinking.
I mean,
not
to mention print it out,
you know. Print it out, yeah,
they're
exactly.
Welcome to print it out.
I spent $69 million on this A4 sheet.
I can print out two copies, and then
they'll probably half the value.
Fairness, they'll probably spend as much on the ink to print it as well.
That's true.
Ink company price joke.
Nice.
But I mean, is it not to a lesser extent the same thing with physical art? You know, physical art deteriorates, true, at a much slower rate normally. But you know, if you have children with crayons, they could absolutely just destroy a piece of art there and then there.
This is true.
I mean,
or, you know, other environmental factors, natural disasters.
I feel like you're going, there's definitely a very profound point here, Alex, of like, everything dies. Is anything worth value anymore?
Nothing is permanent. Everything is transitory. Yeah,
yeah.
Life is pointless.
Yeah.
But at least with traditional art, you can conserve it. You can restore art that gets damaged. And my wife is an archivist, so she talks about a big thing about archives is, with physical objects, you can determine the life cycle. You can say when it enters an archive, that's the end, effectively, of its life cycle. It's the time when people have stopped using it. So that's when you say, right, we're going to preserve this thing. And then you put it in the right storage conditions. You restore it if you need to. And you just check in on it every once in a while, and you protect it. And you can make it, already it can last for a very long time as a physical object, but you can make it last forever, potentially, by saying, this is the end of this object's life cycle. Nobody wants this thing anymore. It's being preserved.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to know if there's a similar role for people in the digital world, where their job is to back things up and to make sure that those records aren't lost.
Well, there is. Digital records management is a huge part of the archives industry now. But a big debate that they have is, when does a digital object or digital file's life cycle end? You know, because it's most digital files are relevant to people for a few hours.
Yeah.
You know, like an email. When is an email's life cycle ended, and when should it be preserved? And then how do you preserve it? Because you've got all these problems I just listed beforehand about preserving digital files is almost impossible. At least with an email, you can print it off and have a hard copy, as well as a copy on a hard drive, as well as a copy on the internet in the cloud. Whereas
you can back it up in a few places,
Yeah, with your art, and in this case, particularly with NFTs, once you create a physical copy of it, what's the point? boom, head explodes.
Going back to the issue of the carbon footprint for a second, because there is some debate about this. So we should we should say, like, some people have said that, you know, the people making these NFTs or buying or selling them are responsible for the emissions generated by Ethereum blockchain, by the people mining Ethereum blockchain, because that's what the blockchain used for these NFTs. However, there's a lot of people who are arguing that they're not responsible for it, and the people trading Ethereum or mining Ethereum would just be trading something else if it wasn't these NFTs. The miners would still be there plugging away at these digital puzzles and mining blockchains either way, regardless of whether they were buying or selling NFTs. The question is whether they've increased the emissions from Ethereum since NFTs have gained in popularity. But that seems to be quite difficult to do for some reason.
If the market expands and Ethereum, I imagine, goes up in value as a result of this new application, then of course more people will mine it if it's lucrative, won't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then the knock-on of that would be that that there are more emissions. So I can't see how if a new market opens up that's very lucrative and very popular, that the knock-on effect wouldn't be that that more emissions would be created as a result. That would be my natural thought. But until there are solid stats and figures, we won't know. But that does seem to be the case. I mean, another question would be, is the issue here with those who are promoting this within the art world? Is the issue more with them, or equally attributed to them, as it is with people mining? And I guess from their point of view, they're just thinking this is a new way to distribute art, to buy art, and to own it.
Yeah.
And not necessarily thinking about that environmental impact.
You wouldn't, would you? You're just using a computer. You wouldn't suddenly
it's
think
a service for you.
You wouldn't suddenly think that what you're doing online is creating is, you know, using the electricity of 1 month supply of an EU resident.
I do have to think how much energy we consume with these podcasts, the three of us recording for hours on end.
We should sell the podcast as an NFT. Can be any kind of digital product. Let's do it. If you want to invest in our new NFT.
With the hours that people have listened to this.
Yeah.
Thousands of people for all those hours, how much energy that is. But then you could argue if they weren't listening to this, they'd be doing something else equally as energy zapping.
Yeah, you might hope.
That's the same argument for the Ethereum mining, isn't it? As if they're not mining it for the art world, they'll be mining it just for another application anyway.
The whole carbon emission thing seems to be a problem with Ethereum or all cryptocurrencies. But Ethereum in particular is a particularly bad culprit, and that seems to be the one that's linked with these NFTs. So the solutions people are coming up with is to pursue greener cryptocurrencies, ones that require less computational power. And there's some different ideas. Ethereum has said itself they're looking at working towards a system called proof of stake, which I'm not going to pretend to understand. But basically, if they implement it, it will essentially bring their electricity consumption to almost zero overnight. like in addition to, they wouldn't require computational power.
What?
It basically requires users to have some kind of skin in the game when they're doing these transactions. Instead of having to pay for this electricity to mine data, they would have to put something in. Some of their own other cryptocurrency tokens into the network to prove they've got a stake to then legitimize the cryptocurrency.
But if they can...
I don't understand.
If they can do that, they should do that already. They are morally obliged to reduce their carbon emissions. Damn it, man.
Yeah. I thought initially that some of the intrinsic value came from the fact that you were using a lot of energy in order to create the cryptocurrency.
This is another way of like creating that intrinsic value by having people put in their value to then legitimize that cryptocurrency, I think, is the idea.
That makes no sense, but we'll roll with it.
Guys, I've got this new company, this new business I'm starting up. You put in your value.
Put your value, just whatever it put is, your value whatever in, it might be.
And you've got a unique... Write down four numbers on a piece of paper and you've got a unique item.
It's number Wang.
Yes, that's number Wang.
Have you seen that episode of Black Mirror when they're on the bicycles?
Yes.
Is this just heading towards something similar? Yeah, 10 million credits, I think.
10 million credits, yeah.
Is this just heading towards that? We're all just on bikes trying to
just don't understand.
Legitimize a cryptocurrency. Yeah, I just want to buy Nyan Cat.
I'm sure there are people at home that have also looked into Ethereum mining and what Alex is saying about this greener form of it. So if you want to chuck in your 2 cents and maybe provide some insight, then please feel free to
please do enlighten us. Generally, give us your thoughts on: are you into NFTs? Do you create them? Do you buy them? Do you trade in them? Please let us know.
Would you buy them?
And more importantly, would you if you're new to it, like us, especially me? What's your views on this whole situation? And as Martin said, please go and find out more about potentially green blockchain creators. I think I'm using the right terminology here.
do you think that this is going to be the future of digital art trading?
Yeah.
Or is this just an unsustainable bubble of activity that's super popular now, but is going to explode in a dramatic fashion sometime in the near future?
And if it is sustainable, do you think it's worth it? Do you think it will still be here in 1,000 years' time? Let me know.
Will we still be here in 1,000 years' time?
Nothing.
Also true.
Nothing lasts forever.
I mean, another point of discussion would be, you know, why do you necessarily need blockchain or Ethereum to actually do this? Couldn't you make a digital copy of your artwork that is then licensed that someone could buy?
I think.
But anyway.
I mean, technically that's the point, isn't it? Like, technically that's already a thing, but everyone just gets around with it with a right click and a copy, don't they?
So they do, but if the whole idea is that the only value of this is based on what people believe it to be.
Yes, then, that's true.
Then it doesn't. Then it sure doesn't matter about the blockchain bit. But anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess
it's the record of it, though, isn't it? It's that creates that unique record of you actually having ownership.
I suppose, yes.
It all seems a bit insane to me, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Well, thank goodness we discussed it for an hour.
Shall we do a quiz?
Sounds good.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
So, welcome to the quiz. As always, 10 questions with a bonus question in case of a tie. And before then, buzzers. Gentlemen, show me your buzzers. Martin.
Well, I've gone for a Shrek 4 classic.
Wow.
Get her on. An ogre only roars when he's angry. You don't want to see me angry, do you?
Do it.
Do it.
I've never seen Shrek 4.
Get her on.
It's all right.
That's the best bit.
Yeah,
it's it's okay.
Yeah, it was surprisingly not funny. As in, it wasn't. It was more dramatic than it was funny. I remember.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I liked about Shrek, the dramatic moments.
I've now seen them all dozens of times.
Oh,
so,
you fall into that trap.
What's the best one, Martin? What's the best one?
Best one's the first one. First one. Mm. I think it does go 1, 2, 3, 4 for me.
Oh, really?
Or maybe 1... Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Maybe 1, 3, 2, 4.
1, 3, 2, 4. Are you insane?
One's got a good story. 2 story is a bit ropey, but the comedy is up there. So...
What do you have? What'd you go for?
Well, I've only seen three. The first three. No, I've only seen the first three. For me, it's 2, 1, 3.
Yeah, no.
2, 1, 3.
2, 1, 4, 3. Okay. I think. So, Alex, what's your buzzer?
I've gone for this classic.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest. Have a look at the headlock here.
Get your hands off my penis!
Get your hands off my penis!
Oh, a bit disappointed they went for Orson Welles after my fact this week, but you know, whatever.
Well, we've already—I had Orson Welles last week, and we've already mentioned him in this week's podcast. So I thought, now's my time to go for a
drunk Australian thief, meal thief. How is day?
Alleged.
Okay. he's creating art now, isn't he? He sells art of paintings he paints of him in that meme. So, you know.
I would invest in his NFT.
His NFT.
He created an NFT of that.
All right, then. Question number one. On the London Underground map, which line is green?
Get her out.
An ogre only roars.
Oh, man. I think there might have been Australian guy. Just.
Okay.
That is the district line.
Correct. It is the district line. 1-0 to Alex.
Very much.
Sorry, Martin. It was so close.
Very close.
Sorry,
very close.
Martin.
It's okay. It's okay.
Question number two. Closest wins. The United States of America bought Alaska from Russia in 1867. But for how many cents... Because the question's weird. How many cents per acre of land did the Americans pay Russia? Closest wins.
Per acre of land?
Yeah, per acre of land, how many cents?
Oh my God. I'm trying to work out how many acres of land it would be.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Acres are not actually that big at all, really, is it?
And I don't... And Alaska is big. Alaska's massive.
I mean, it's just like an average. You know, you don't. So, I mean, Martin buzzed first, so you can if you want to guess, you can guess, or you can let Alex guess.
I was going to say something really, really, really low. Like, I was going to think they bought it for like literally next to nothing, which would mean that it would be like less than a cent per acre.
Okay.
But that now seems ridiculous when you say how many cents. So I'm not.
Well, I mean,
do
the
that.
Answer could be. Not plural, yeah, it could be. Yeah,
yeah, it could be. Let's go for a round number. Let's go for 10 cents.
Okay, Alex?
Keeping it quite low.
See, I think you're along the right lines there, Martin, with the whole really low cost. So I'm going to go... I'm going to go 7 cents.
Okay, Alex is closer. It's 2 cents per acre.
2 cents per acre, wow. Yeah,
which
wow.
is less than 40 cents today. They spent $7.2 million on Alaska back in 1867, which even today is under $140 million.
Wow.
They bought an entire state, basically a country.
Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos could have bought Alaska and it literally be pennies to them. How mad is that?
That is crazy. Yep. So Martin, you were if you'd gone for 0.1 cents, you would have. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But 2-0, going into question 3. What connects Sylvia Trench, Domino Derval, Honey Rider, and Pussy Galore?
Do the roar.
An ogre only roars.
That was Do the Roar, Martin.
They're all Bond girls.
Correct. Or Bond women today, as we should say.
Well, back in the day, they're called Bond girls, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Specifically, which era?
Sean Connery.
Yeah, there you go. Nice one. Question number four, 2-1.
You old fogies.
Knowledgeable.
With your Bond knowledge.
Knowledgeable. Which of the two following live TV broadcasts drew the most viewers? You have to tell me how many, just which one. Was it Princess Diana's funeral in 1997 or Michael Jackson's memorial service in 2009? Yes, Matt.
Memorial service? Is this in the UK we're talking about?
Worldwide.
Oh, goodness. That's tough.
Now, I mean, actually, the answer is the same. Diana's funeral. So it doesn't really,
Diana's funeral was the biggest in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest televised event in the UK ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that on that list, there's like a replay of like an FA Cup final. It's so strange. It's like number fourth. I still don't really know why. Diana. She was big around the world, wasn't she? She was pretty big. Michael Jackson, superstar. Oh, man. I'm going to go Diana. I'm going to go Diana.
You would be correct. Princess Diana's
Fair
funeral.
Enough. I was definitely going to go for Michael Jackson.
It was close. 2.5 billion viewers in 1997 for Diana's funeral. For Michael Jackson's memorial service in 2009, 2.45 billion.
Oh, wow. So close.
That's so close. Yeah. But given the...
2.5 billion for Diana.
I know. And this is with 12 years of added networks and satellites and countries with TV as well on Michael Jackson's part. You know. Pretty close. Wow. Although some estimates say it's higher, but the viewing figures from the timer put Diana as higher. So that's two all going into question five. If you dug a straight tunnel through the earth from central Spain, in which country would you end up?
From central Spain?
Right through the earth to the other side.
Bloody good question. Okay.
So through the core as well, so not. Not across, but through.
Which country?
Oh, let's just go. An ogre only.
Yes, Martin.
Let's go for the classic. Often people think that from here it's Australia, but it's not, is it? So I'm going to go for Spain. Is Australia?
No.
Oh.
This is Democracy Manifest.
Yes, Alex.
I'm going to go for China.
Not China.
Isn't the USA China?
Possibly.
Oh, quite a lot of the USA.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay.
Should we have another one? Is that
Yeah.
Okay, so Spain is pretty much just south of us, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. So.
Roars when he's angry. You don't want to see me angry, do you?
Do it.
Yeah.
New Zealand.
Yes, New Zealand. I think it's 3-2 to Martin. Closest wins. How much of the total mass of our solar system does the sun account for? Give me a percentage.
God.
What percentage of the mass of our solar system is the sun?
The mass of the whole solar system. Yeah. The sun's quite big.
Is it?
But it's also like...
and it's pretty damn dense at the core.
It's the closest wins, so you can...
I don't know this.
Do you want to go first on this one, Alex?
Okay. Says Martin.
Can I went first on the last one?
This is Democracy Manifest.
Say 90%.
I'm going to go 75%.
Ooh, okay.
That's quite high, isn't it? That sounds really high. It is big, though. I'll just go round number 50. I think it's lower, though.
Alex is closer.
Really?
Yeah, it's 99.8%.
No! What?
Yeah, 99.8% of the mass of our solar system is the sun. Yeah, so...
Oh, man.
Yeah, you could have said 90%, Alex, and you would have been very close. Crazy.
99.8%?
Yep. 0.2% of the solar system is planets and asteroids, and I think...
How is this not taught?
It's mad, isn't it? Which country has the longest national anthem?
Oh, good question. Wow, well, that is...
The longest national anthem. Who's really up themselves?
This is Democracy Manifest.
Yes, Alex.
Is it going to be North Korea?
No.
Oh,
good guess, though.
It's going to be one where if they sing it at events, they don't sing all of it. And I know that Scotland has a few verses. So I'm gonna go. Scotland is that? There doesn't have that many verses, does it? It's what, four verses? Four verses. Spain's quite a long anthem. But I'm going to go for something completely out there and random. Let's go for Argentina.
No.
Can we have a clue?
Do you want a clue? Yeah, it's in Europe. Which I guess gives you a clue.
This is Democracy Manifest.
Yes, Alex.
Italy.
Nope.
No, theirs isn't that long, is it?
I'll be honest, Martin. I know literally no national.
Is this all sporting knowledge? This is where you learn the anthems, Martin.
Well, we're learning them. I don't know the answer to the question, so not well enough. But Italy's, yeah, that's played quite often in the rugby, isn't it? Okay, I'm thinking east. I'm going east here. Let's go for Let's go for Bulgaria.
No.
This is Democracy Manifest.
Yes, Alex.
Greece.
Spot on. It's Greece.
Yes.
Bonus point if you can tell me how many verses. No, I won't ask for that.
Seven.
Martin, do you have any advance on seven?
It's 11.
That's 158.
No.
Come on, get over yourself. I know you invented democracy, but that was ages ago. What have you done since then?
By the end, are they just like, and thank you also everyone in this country for the scrubs and the dirtlands?
Just a list of whoever the composer's cousins were. Yeah, it's like... Anyway, so that's 4-3 to Alex.
4-3, blimey.
Question number 8. True or false? Olympus Mons on Mars is the tallest mountain in the solar system.
Ogre only roars when he's angry.
I'm not sure who I heard first.
I think it was you, Alex.
Was Alex? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
True.
If you say so.
I'll have to go for false then.
Yeah, Martin gets the point.
It's false.
It's false.
There we go.
It's Rhea Silvia. Is the tallest mountain on the asteroid Vesta in the asteroid belt.
Oh, I didn't know we were counting asteroids.
I said this, I said in the solar system. Olympus Mons is the tallest planetary mountain. If you're interested, it is 21 kilometers tall.
What? Hang on. On an asteroid, everything on an asteroid is a mountain. Like the whole asteroid is it's just a rock. How does that count?
Roughly half the diameter of the asteroid, to be fair, this particular mountain. But it's a big asteroid. It's a minor planet, Vesta. It's big enough.
How do you define mountain if it's not attached to something that's not a mountain?
Like we're on a big rock.
Yeah. The rest of the asteroid isn't a mountain, and this bit is.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, the Vesta's... Rhea Silvia on the asteroid Vesta, which is a minor planet, is 22.5 kilometers tall. So it's 1.5 kilometers taller than Olympus Mons, which is considerably taller than Everest, which is only 8.9 kilometers.
That's mad,
pretty puny, aren't we? Here on Earth.
Imagine the view from that one.
Whew. Question number 9, and that's for all, isn't it? Yeah. Which technology giant was originally called Backrub?
Oh my god.
I'm just thinking who would come up with such a terrible name.
This is Democracy Manifest.
No, yes, Alex.
That was stupid.
Oh, well.
That didn't even make sense with that language. I'm going to go for something different because it's not going to be that.
Okay.
Apple.
Not Apple. Well, I don't think they'd have had the same success.
Ogre only roars when he's angry.
Yes.
You don't want to see me angry, do you?
Do it.
Yes, Martin.
Yahoo.
No. You're in the right area. It is Silicon Valley, for sure.
Someone at home is going to know this. Well, a lot of people, I imagine. Backrub. It sounds like it. It's probably a social media giant, isn't it? It's got to be. With something like Backrub. But will it be one? I mean, the way you phrased it is it's going to be a current one too. It's not going to be one that's kind of died.
I'll let you have that. It's a current one. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
General, an ogre only roars when he's angry. You don't want to.
Instagram.
No. That would be really weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Then they called it something just, I don't know, something. Oh.
Yes, that's a good Alex.
LinkedIn.
No, but actually, good, that would work. Yeah, I can see what you're going with.
You're rubbing each other's backs in a weird self-promotional way.
And then someone realised, that doesn't sell very well to the target None audience of young bad. Professionals. We...
Back rub. My goodness.
Oh, man.
Can we have a clue?
Does it make sense? Does it make sense thinking about it? Or is it just completely random?
There is a logic behind it, but to be honest, the logic is tenuous, I think. I'm trying to think of a clue that won't give it away too much. Sometimes, if we're lucky, we get money from these people.
Only roars when he's angry. You don't want to see me angry, do you?
Yes.
It's YouTube.
It's not YouTube.
Is democracy managed?
No.
Yes, Alex.
Google.
It is Google.
What?
It's Google, yeah.
What?
Google, Alphabet Incorporated, was originally called Backrub.
Wow.
I'm blown away. About 99, well, this is ridiculous. 99 the sun, and then Google's called Backrub. What?
And apparently the reason was because as a search engine, it would scrub through all the data at the behind the scenes, at the back of the internet. I know, tenuous, as I said. That was,
what a terrible
I
name.
I think they just wanted, there were students, and I would call it Backrub, that was all. But, Backrub. Yeah.
I thought they would have gone in with Google.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, Google's such a good name.
Crazy.
Yeah. And also still a weird name. So, yeah.
Yeah, Backrub didn't make, I don't know why I said YouTube. I think I was just trying to get there quickly. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, sorry, I feel bad that you didn't get it, but also I'm glad the clue wasn't that obvious. But, yeah.
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But, yeah, so what is that now? That's
5-4
to Alex, yeah. Martin, you could equalise. Fingers on buzzers for this one, because I think this is going to be tight. You ready?
Yeah, yeah.
Question number 10. Which city is also known as Ulriki?
This is Democracy Manifest.
Yes, Alex.
I didn't actually hear what you said, but I'm going to say Edinburgh.
Yes.
I feel like I had to say Edinburgh as soon as he said which city, I was like, I've got to go for Edinburgh, because if I guess a different city and it's Edinburgh, I'm going to look like an idiot.
Sorry, Martin. But well done, Alex. Well done. Do you know what it means, Alex?
What was it? Sorry, I didn't actually hear it.
Ulriki.
Ulriki.
Yeah. In fact, someone in the comments last week said Lang Meyal Umrik, which is...
I did look that up, yeah, which is... And I've forgotten.
Your chimney smoke.
Yeah. Long may your chimney smoke, yes.
Yeah, so Ulriki is old smoke.
That was Liam, wasn't it? Liam
Mullen, yeah.
Liam Mullen, thank you,
the
Liam.
The one, the only Mullen, Liam, yes. So, bonus question?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not?
It's again, Edinburgh related, closest wins.
Oh, but you're showing my ignorance of the city I live in.
No, it's all right. This was a hastily done one, because Martin reminded me by something he said that the bonus question should be a closest wins. So I was like, oh, crap, I need to come up with something quick. So what is the distance in kilometres, closest wins, between London and Edinburgh?
In kilometres?
Yeah.
In kilometres?
You've gone all European.
We're still in the EU.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that too far? Let's go for 674 kilometres.
Oh my god.
Ooh, good one. Okay.
I reckon you're so close there.
But which direction, really, Alex? In which direction is it close?
Have a look at the headlock here.
I'm going to say 700 kilometres.
Ooh, Martin's closer. 649 kilometres.
There we go.
Yeah, good guess. You worked that out from... Did you really convert that in your head?
Yeah, I was trying to, but I did. Yeah. It was still a guess, wasn't it? But a rough guess.
A rough guess. Like the medical dogs.
Rough guess by your arms.
Well, thank you for joining me for that quiz. Well done, Alex. And that was close. Thank you. Closer than Thank the score you. Suggests, yes. I think. Yeah.
Where are we now on the scoreboards? Ooh. I mean, it's going to come up on screen. Anyway,
we must be pretty...
Looking, where are we now? Looking at last week, now? Swan, I think Robin's on 4 wins. I'm on 3, and I think Martin's on 2.
Oh.
But so that's Martin, close, though. That gives Martin... You can easily catch up to either of us. You're only two wins away.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
I hope you've kept that. We'll see. Hope you've kept that awesome mug because I'm coming for it.
In the night, you shall not know, but he will come for it. Oh,
there we go.
I'm not paying the shipping cost for it to be sent up to Edinburgh.
I was about
as well.
To say, what do we do then? Because now we're not further away than we were before.
The Royal Mail will happily deliver to Scotland. Still.
For the time being.
Yeah, until it becomes independent. I do. Right. Well, thank you for joining me for the quiz. Thank you all for listening to us at home on your podcast platform of choice and for watching us on YouTube if you took the time to look at our ugly faces. But please share your thoughts on today's subject and feel free to go check out our Patreon A Little More Interesting podcasts, also available to our YouTube members. And don't forget that our next podcast will be streamed live on Twitch at a time and date to be disclosed. Keep an eye on our community tab and our Twitter feed and then shortly uploaded to YouTube afterwards. But we'll see you next time.
Bye. Head on over to Twitch now.
Head over to Twitch.
If you follow, then you can. Then
if you follow us on Twitch, you'll get an automatic notification when we're live. That is the easiest way to do it. And I keep forgetting to say that. So thank you, Martin.
See you later.
Bye for now.
See you later, guys. Bye.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.